Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Just a second, I'm too busy injecting myself with the comedy gene. Oh yeah, I'm Corey Knockran here.
I am back from vacation, joining Corey again on this episode.
Which means the show is much better.
Thank you again for suffering through last week. In today's episode, we cover several different news topics, including hashtag Facebook down, a new congressional IoT bill, and the U.S.'s new stance on combating cyber threats.
Because everyone needs more hashtags in their life.
Hashtag, hashtag. Hashtag the 443 podcast. After that, we jump into our main section, where we discuss Pokemon and Magic the Gathering, and a little bit of biohacking. Let's jump into the news. All right, news time.
News time, excellent.
Yeah, let's start with what's probably the biggest topic on most people's minds. Last week, the hashtag Facebook down started trending on Wednesday after, Facebook went down.
By the way, good job saying last week, considering it was yesterday. Way to actually pay attention to when we publish the podcast.
Way to break the fourth wall, Corey. So on Wednesday of last week, early-ish in the morning, Facebook, WhatsApp, their Messenger app, Instagram all had connectivity issues.
Oh, so sad.
Facebook was not very forthcoming at the time with what the issues exactly were, which is somewhat understandable. You want to try and figure out what the problem is before you start announcing it to the world. They were quick to say that it was not a cyber attack. They said it was not a denial of service attack. That didn't stop the 20 or so articles I read all saying, is this a cyber attack or a DDoS attack?
Can't blame them. I mean, that would have been my question immediately. It is kind of weird that some of the articles I read about this incident talked about something happening in Europe, because I don't really feel like that's where Facebook's infrastructure is.
My first thought, I guess both of our first thoughts
went to... Yeah, I guess we thought about this too.
Was it a BGP issue like Google had, Cloudflare had a few months ago?
But yeah. I was secretly hoping for that just so your prediction could be right. I know that's probably evil. I want a DDoS attack on Facebook to prove us right.
If it doesn't come true by December, I'll just make it happen. I mean, if
there's an issue... easily possible. You better be careful, dude.
If there is an issue in December, it wasn't me. Facebook did release an update just an hour before we recorded this, though. And they said that it was a server configuration change that triggered a cascading series of issues.
Oops.
Which is, you know, they're not the first company to have this problem.
Kind of sounds like what happened with the was it Nigerian or African ISP in the Google thing you mentioned?
Nigeria is in Africa, so.
But was it Nigerian? Am I remembering right?
Yep. But in this case, I mean, I can't count the number of times I've seen a company make a change that just spirals out of control and breaks everything. I think it happens to Reddit every like 6 months or so.
Yeah.
Especially in the early days. I remember it happening every 6 weeks or so. That was always exciting.
But it does kind of show you how interconnected all the things on the internet is. And by the way, I mean, it's interesting that this server change didn't only affect Facebook, but all the other properties. You'd think they'd have like separate routing infrastructures, even though they're owned. The one you didn't mention, but could have affected me if I were at home playing instead of here working, is Oculus was affected too. So
that's right, the Facebook
no VR
Oculus
updates.
Rift.
Yeah.
But as of now, not a cyber attack. Depending on if you want to trust Facebook or not with their statement. Who knows these days?
Don't worry. Marcus promised he'll change that in December. Watch out, Facebook.
Moving on to our next news topic. Congress has introduced an IoT security bill.
Woohoo! That is a successful prediction for you from last year.
Exactly. So this one's actually a little different than the one that California passed towards the end of last year. And this one really boils down to they're going to require NIST to come up with security standards for federal agencies, which, as we know, with a lot of NIST best practices, a lot of other industries tend to follow along with them as well. So this is a good move, I think, assuming it passes through everything.
Yeah. And by the way, NIST is a good thing for organizations to follow now. They all have a ton of best practice documents on just about everything.
What's your favorite NIST best
Windows
practice document?
Windows servers, for instance, hardening servers.
1.3 alpha 5 QS.
I certainly don't have them memorized.
That is my one complaint with NIST is, I mean, I guess if you're a federal agency like that, you have to have some sort of organization thing. It's just not very human readable.
You could say that of CVE too.
Truth. But at least CVEs have cool, well, I guess they probably have cool names too then. Whatever. Good job, NIST. Keep it up. Regardless of if this bill passes or not, it would be cool if they went ahead and just started making requirements for IoT security for federal agencies, because I feel like it's just needed in general right now.
From our White Tower, I totally agree. But if that meant like a 25% increase on all consumer IoT devices, do you think everyone would be happy about that?
Probably not. But I mean,
yeah, they're probably not happy about car insurance either. But exactly. It's a great idea.
Whatever improves safety, because I mean, people aren't going to request it on their own. So at some point, we need someone to step in and require it. News item number three also revolves around the U.S. government. So General Paul Nakasone, who is the head of U.S. Cyber Command in the United States, spoke in front of the House Armed Services Subcommittee last week, which, ooh, exciting.
Yeah.
It was their budgeting subcommittee.
I definitely would have wanted to tune into C-SPAN to watch that.
There were some real interesting highlights that came out of it, though. He mentioned that Russia, China, North Korea, Iran have all been increasing the advancement of their attacks recently, which is, I mean, we've seen that from 2016 to 2018. I'm sure they added some improvements. But more interestingly, they said that the United States cyber defense is going to take a much stronger, more aggressive approach to defending and counterattacking against these kinds of attacks. Part of it is U.S. Cyber Command is now empowered to make real quick, aggressive decisions, which I think is needed in cybersecurity, because trying to cut through red tape could be the difference between something successfully getting breached and something not. They said that they're going to start doing more counterattacks as well, which we actually saw in 2018. U.S. Cyber Command and NSA shut down the Internet Research Agency, the IRA, out of Russia for several days after the 2018 election until it was certified. So, seems like the cyber cold war is going to start turning into a warm war.
I have mixed nuanced feeling about this. I actually don't believe in offensive strike back. I'm okay with them actually having all the authority they need to make quick defensive decisions and even do some, like, let's call it a cyber sanction, where you cut off, you know, if we control enough routing infrastructure to say, screw you, we're just cutting you off from all our internet resources. And by the way, there's a lot of stuff that Russian citizens would be upset because they couldn't get to if we cut them off. That I'm kind of okay with. But to me, this is an escalating arms race that can be just as dangerous in the future as nuclear warfare, even though that sounds kind of weird.
So you're not on board with cutting off like the IRA, for example, if they're trying to spread propaganda by like attacking them directly, or just cutting them off from?
It depends on what your strike back is. As I said, if you're cutting Russia off from your internet, thus not allowing them to attack you and not allowing the propaganda, that's one thing. But if you're attacking their critical infrastructure or breaching their networks too, that's just going to create escalation.
That's fair. And as a side note in this, I remember reading an article a month or so ago about how Russia is actually planning on at some point in the near future cutting themselves off from the internet for a short time just to test the capability.
Yeah, they're planning on testing it. And by the way, we've talked about internet kill switch is the vernacular I think they use. Obama was talking about having a kill switch at one point, I believe.
Which is, it's an interesting tactic, because imagine if you are at war with someone, which these days, whenever World War III happens, it's going to include cyber attacks as well.
Absolutely.
And your critical infrastructure is under attack. Maybe just isolating yourself for a short bit of time from everyone else is going to be required.
Yep.
So
I could see some value in that. On the flip side, I know one of the things that is holding back a multinational cybersecurity treaty is the question of whether a state or a nation should have the power to control their own internet, or it should be like some sort of multinational group that controls how the internet routes. And so, yes, I even proposed that cutting off the U.S. from attack might be a good thing. On the flip side, if you think about controlling your own internet for your nation, it can also lead to great firewalls of China and censorship and other human.
That's happened in a few places. I think it was like Turkey during the coup a few years back. They cut off basically all social media access from
the Arab Spring had all kinds of censorship going on. So it's a very nuanced discussion. I'm not naive enough to not think we need some sort of, U.S. Cyber Command doing something if we get attacked. I just feel like it's a dangerous precedent.
It's going to be interesting to watch this evolve, because he also mentioned during his talk at the Budget Committee that they were monitoring attacks and trying to learn from them during the 2018 elections to try and prepare for 2020. So who knows what we can expect then.
I'm also curious what they're going to do if the attack is like literally Facebook propaganda. I mean, fake news is bad and can actually influence people's minds. And yes, how do you attack back for that kind of thing?
I think we saw that last week when we just took Facebook offline. Problem
solved. Yeah, there you go. I'm okay with removing all the fake news, but strike back implies doing something to the person posting it or the thing posting it. We'll see. Interesting world we live in.
We will see.
I guess you and I have some job security.
This is true. And, well, hopefully they don't come after us.
Oh, God, no.
So our main topic today is actually the first part of a multi-part series over the course of the next weeks, months, years, decades. Who knows?
Wow, you have a lot to say about this subject.
It's actually
really... Are we talking about Pokemon and Magic?
Way to spoil the surprise. Thanks. All right. Well, I'm going to pick a different topic now. So let's talk about biohacking instead.
Wow, that was a really good ad lib. That's a great topic.
Yeah.
I never would have guessed.
Good thing I did a bunch of research for this, too.
Wow.
On top
Think
of
ahead.
Pokemon and Magic the Gathering. So biohacking is obviously a topic that takes much more than 30, 40 minutes, however long these podcasts typically are. So we want to try and split it up. And
20 minutes when Mark's talking, 45 minutes when Corey won't shut up.
Exactly. Speak of the devil. We're going to try and split it up. And today we want to just go with a high-level intro to exactly what biohacking is. So Corey and I mean, when we first think of biohacking, I know a lot of people, your first thoughts are, oh, injecting yourself with a chip.
Yeah, the ones you normally see initially at hacking conventions are the dudes that have put like a magnet in their finger or a RFID chip somewhere so they don't have to carry around their key card. Or, you know, you think kind of the cyberpunk that eventually wants to become a cybernetic, you know, organism,
transhuman.
Yeah. But, well, very cool, by the way, and actually part of biohacking, but there's more to it, right?
Yeah, it's actually, biohacking is a really loose definition, but in the end, it boils down to the idea that if you can control inputs into your body, whether it be diet or chemicals or computer chips or medicine or even genetic modifications, then you can control and improve outputs like strength or mental ability or human longevity.
I'd say a simpler even definition is human-controlled evolution, not letting natural evolution change us for better or worse, but actually somehow taking control of how our bodies evolve.
Exactly. And it really covers everything from implanting RFID chips at DEF CON to like your local soccer mom drinking more kale in order to improve her health.
Although I would argue that the kale smoothie, while you could maybe pedantically say that any sort of healthy eating could be biohacking, the type of drinking something I've seen in biohacking is more about specially engineered viruses, or it's not simple healthy eating. It's actually specially crafted, you know, literally genes, as we'll get into, that you ingest or inject into yourself, or even cocktails that you drink to increase the bacteria in your stomach and to not be lactose intolerant anymore.
Oh, that would be so great. I miss cheese.
Apparently one person tried to do it.
Well, over the course of the next few episodes or so, with maybe a few breaks here and there, we're going to dive into the cool parts of biohacking and really the ones that overlap with hacker culture. Well, I mean, kale smoothies.
You're right. Okay.
Some of the things we're going to focus on are overlaps like reverse engineering, humanity, experimentation, and augmentation. So with that, let's jump into where exactly did biohacking come from? What are its origins? And the idea has been around for several thousand years. Like selective breeding that the Romans used to do is technically biohacking, where you try and get a certain kind of cow that maybe can survive different climates or have more meat on it, for example. But more precise genetic engineering, which is a form of biohacking, is really much, much more recent. To throw some dates out there, the first genetically modified organism, the first GMO, was a bacterium in 1973. The first animal that was modified was a mouse the next year. Insulin-producing bacteria were commercialized in 1982. The first edible GMO was something called the Flavor Saver tomato. Do you remember this, Corey?
Yep. And I also remember a lot of LA friends not eating tomatoes anymore because they don't want those GMO modified tomatoes with fish scales in them or whatever.
1994, where they genetically modified a tomato to have a longer shelf life and be more resistant to insects and different herbicides and pesticides. There's genetically modified pets you can get, the glowfish.
My daughter has some.
Which, if you haven't seen them, they are brightly fluorescent fish that you'll find in almost every pet store these days under a black light.
Yep.
They're pretty cool, but it's interesting to see how far this genetic engineering is coming.
Yeah.
And you somewhat understand some people's concerns around it because...
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure we'll talk about it. I will say, by the way, the two things I would... Like, maybe this is a debate for us, but for the things you talked about, those were all kind of scientifically controlled genetic engineering. Mm-hmm. And those seem sometimes have regulation, usually are very slow and specific. I kind of consider biohacking not to be those cases. It's when somebody that doesn't maybe have a traditional science background, or maybe they have a traditional science background, but they're not working for an organization, and they're trying to pull out the DIY part. This stuff people are doing, anyone can do. And if we want to increase humanity, we should have the freedom of being able to do it. So to me, biohacking specifically is more when you have kind of, I don't want to call them hobbyists because some of them are super smart and probably are scientists for their day job.
I'd still be a hobbyist.
But they're kind of doing it on their own. And that's kind of what switches over from genetic engineering to biohacking to me.
Yeah, and it is an interesting parallel because there are obviously professional like security experts, professional hackers, whereas there's also the hobbyist ones that taught themselves in their mom's basement.
Exactly, and there's also hackers that work at security as a professional security person at their day job, but really they actually started as hobbyist hackers and go much beyond what they do in their day job. So the other thing I wanted to mention specifically for this genetic thing, and let me know if this gets into any of the parts we're going to do in the future, but I think a relatively recent evolution to all of genetic engineering is CRISPR.
Yep.
Which I won't ask you to memorize this particular acronym because it's not in our field, but clustered regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats is what CRISPR stands for, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, everyone knows that.
I know. And apparently, you know, this is basically how, by essentially using the same kind of techniques that bacteria uses, where you can pretty surgically find a place in a DNA strand, and then using something called a CRISPR-associated protein 9, an enzyme that helps you surgically cut that string.
Yeah, I have one of those in my cupboard at home.
Yeah. You're joking, but the reason, I mean, CRISPR has really increased our humanity's ability to genetically engineer things in very live environments. I mean, directly by injecting into things like mice. And you joke about having one, but there's a guy named Joshua Zayer who runs the Odin. He sells a $159 CRISPR kit that you can use at home.
Really? Yeah. And what could I use this for? Like inject myself with superhuman
powers?
Well,
this guy was known for actually CRISPRing himself on a live stream while swigging scotch.
No one wants to watch someone CRISPR themselves on a live stream.
It sounds gross, but essentially what it meant is he injected his arm. And what he did was he is trying to edit the myostatin gene, which inhibits muscle growth. So the point is this injection, one arm could have got all beefy if this worked. So there's, and he, by the way, is a PhD from the University of Chicago. He's a biologist. He worked at NASA, smart guy, but he's one of the heads of the kind of DIY genetic engineering movement. Although he's recently kind of stepped, a lot of people have done this live injection of stuff that hasn't been tested lately. And now he's admitting that this is pretty darn dangerous and he kind of regrets doing it.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah.
But there's people on the forefront of medicine all the time that
absolutely
are
someone
on
has
themselves.
To be the pioneer, but this is a danger. This is, as with all powerful technologies, can do as much bad as good if you're not careful.
I do love that we live in an age where you can watch someone genetically modify themselves on Twitch, though.
I know. By the way, the only thing that took away this dude's, while I do agree with his drink of choice, I don't know if drinking scotch while you're, you know, injecting yourself with an experimental thing you made to edit your genes, probably not a good precedent to set for the scientific community.
If I'm going to potentially go out, though, I'm going to go out with some scotch in my belly.
That's true. We should all go watch The Fly again.
So we'll go and cover a lot of these different, I'm sure we'll have a whole episode on just genetic modification in the future. But let's go into one of the more interesting subgroups, which is human biohacking. And there's actually several different flavors of human biohacking here. So we mentioned that genetic modification with CRISPR, and that's part of the really the do-it-yourself biology, or DIY bio, as it tends to go by in most circles, which has also been around not terribly long, the late 80s or so. And doing this research, I actually found a really interesting article from the 1988 Washington Post, well, from a copy of the Washington Post released sometime in 1988, called Playing God in Your Basement, which followed basically a hacker turned biohacker discussing the potential ramifications of the upcoming biohacking craze. And it brought up some good points of, like, so we're concerned at that time, hackers were a big topic. The movie Hackers came out around then. It was a lot of concern about people doing malicious things with computer hacking. So this new frontier of biohacking, were there going to be concerns of people developing like a super virus or developing some sort of experimental human modification that turns them into superhumans and wipes out the rest of the human race? Any thoughts on that, Corey?
Don't wipe out the human race.
But when it comes to DIY bio, it's the idea that hobbyists, like you said, non-professionals, even if they may be working in the biology community, but it's the idea that these hobbyists can make contributions to biology without having an advanced biology degree, without working professionally in the biology field.
And go ahead.
There's a lot of parallels between that and hacking.
And by the way, I actually respect that part of it. And even Jasea Zayer and the other people that have done that, I think that's very cool. You know, there's even people that have played with nuclear fusion and fission before on their own, just because you're doing it by yourself.
Wasn't there a kid in,
which
state was it?
The FBI or something came to his shed.
Pulled together like 1,000 smoke alarms or something to get enough radioactive material to start it going.
Yeah. So I think that's cool. The only risk here is the fact of the repercussions you can have, similar to nuclear fission or fusion. I mean, you can bioengineer something that could spread and kill humanity if you're not careful. So
genuine concerns.
This is really kind of the hacker mentality. It is that DIY, do it yourself, think outside the box, learn, and apply that learning to make new and cool things.
And hopefully to the benefit of humanity and not just for the lulz.
But that's the problem with it. It can go both ways, just like hacking. So I think it's very cool.
Another subgroup of human
Before we get past the medicine self-experimentation, I mean, I did talk about there are some guys that, just like Jasea Zayer, one guy actually injected himself with a self-made HIV cure. Mm-hmm. There literally was a gentleman that made a pill that had bacteria where he is trying to change his stomach's bacterial, you know, environment for fixing lactose intolerant. He probably missed pizza as well. So, I mean, this medical self-experimentation is very common.
Yeah, you mentioned Jesse Lasser. He tried to prove that mosquitoes were spreading yellow fever by intentionally allowing one to bite him. He got yellow fever and passed away like 12 days later.
Although that guy's a different than the guy I'm mispronouncing about, Jasea Zayer.
Jesse Lasser.
Yeah, that's I'm not sure who Jesse Lasser is, but Jasea Zayer is the PhD from University
of Chicago. Do you need a fancy name like this in order to do biohacking?
I guess Z's are popular if you're a biohacker.
I'm going to biohack a Z into my name somewhere.
There we go. That seems like an easy project. You don't even need a CRISPR kit for that.
Medicine self-experimentation as a subgroup of human biohacking also has some controversy around it. There's I think the shining example of this is John McAfee, who went off to, I think it was Belize, and tried to synthesize basically drugs, which he experimented on himself with them. Had a grand old time, allegedly murdered his neighbor.
So let's forget John McAfee. Where do you fall on, there's plenty of people, including organizations in other countries that are recreating pain-killing drugs in many different formulas that aren't illegal yet so that they can ship them. And one might argue that some of these drugs can change your mind in a way that might make you better. You know, some people argue that they make you more creative or whatever. But I don't know if creating a drug that's not changing your body. Well, do you believe that's biohacking or is that just experimenting with drugs?
I don't know. I'm going to ask my good friend John McAfee.
Yeah. I don't think I would take his answer.
I feel like it's a fair subgroup.
Like, to me, a drug is a temporary effect. To me, biohacking should be changing you permanently for the better rather than just a temporary effect.
There are some mind-altering substances, though. Like, there are people that claim, like, LSD is basically changed their entire worldview. And there's much more hardcore medicines than that too that can result in similar and much more profound.
I don't know enough if it's actually changed their brain chemistry after or if just an experiment changed this the way they look at life. You know, one is a physical change and one is just a perspective change.
I don't know either. And also clearly you don't know. Hopefully the DEA isn't listening, right?
We probably should try. I mean, that's the only way to find out in the biohacking spirit.
Next week.
Hello, DEA.
Next week on the podcast, Corey drop acid.
The CIA did it.
But just join
an experiment group.
There are serious controversies around this too, because a lot of this self-experimentation is really trying to avoid like permission from ethics committees too.
Yeah.
And trying to avoid red tape. And there's serious risk, obviously. That's why we have things like ethics committees and risk committees.
On one hand, like my personal belief on this is kind of free libertarian. It's that if it's a drug that only affects you, more power to you. You take the risk. You deal with it. My worry is when you get to some of the genetic stuff, it's possible to create a bacteria or a pathogen that could be, communicable.
Wipe out the human race.
Yeah. So as long as it's a type of thing that only affects you, I don't think the government needs to work hard to protect someone from themselves if they are brave and or stupid enough to try something untested.
There's a line, obviously. And hopefully people don't cross it too much. Our next subgroup of human biohacking was my risky click of the day. It actually has a name for this group, an interesting name called Grindrs.
Yeah, that's an app too, right?
It is. But it is also a name of a subcollective of human biohackers that believe in do-it-yourself cybernetic implants and chemical experimentation to enhance bodily functionality.
Yep.
It is.
And these kind of are the ones I think about when I think of biohacking first, even though it's less about biology in some cases.
This is definitely the cool newsworthy gathering one of people like inserting electronics into themselves to become more cybernetic.
By the way, this one could involve biology, but a technology today has more to do with body alteration than real biological hacking, in my opinion.
And it's aligned closely with a view called transhumanism that I did a bunch of reading on, because it's actually quite fascinating, where it's all about developing technologies to enhance human intellect and physiology. So cybernetic implants to make you stronger or smarter or better at seeing. And in the end, it's about becoming a post-human being, which I think becomes a little weird in my opinion at that point. But definitely an interesting rabbit hole to go down to.
Yeah. I don't really tie to the spiritual thing of post-human, but I actually like the idea of us affecting our evolution. You know, we worry about AI all the time, and one of the ways humans can keep up is potentially this sort of thing. Believe it or not, Elon Musk is maybe a Grindr. One of his less, not in the cringy way you just did, but one of his less known companies is Neuralink. Mm-hmm. And it's literally a company trying to make a mind-computer connection so that we literally have our brains connected to a computer with direct
input. Is
this why
Elon Musk is so terrified of AI?
He's getting us ready to live in that simulation if we aren't already.
One of the many pioneers in this area is actually a local Seattleite named Amal Grafstra. And he's one of the first few people to inject people with RFID and NFC implants. He actually is a mainstay at the biohacking village at DEF CON.
Can't you actually do it there too if you can come up and heal?
And he's done a lot of cool things with this. It's not just about like injecting yourself with a chip and saying, hey, look, I got a chip in me. Like his house has locks that only open when his hand is placed on the doorknob because it's tied to his little chip in his hand.
Although ultimately that's just a chip in me. I mean, the coolness is I don't have to carry around a key card.
Exactly. He also had a pretty cool use for it, which is a smart gun that only activates when the person with the correct chip holds it.
By the way, a topic of lots of manga and anime, so it's not surprising that...
I think it was
in
Altered
Carbon,
right?
It's only surprising that the DoD hasn't already done this.
Exactly. Very futuristic, though. And I mentioned the DEFCON biohacking village. It's been there since, I think, 2015 was the first one. And
it's
It's getting big, and there's usually a line out the door of people trying to get NFC and RFID chips injected into their hand. But the biohacking village is actually, they have a lot of interesting topics. It's not just about like grinders or this cybernetic stuff. They do a lot of talks on biosecurity, biology as IT, which is really interesting, using DNA as a data storage device for actual IT data. They talk about bioterrorism and they talk about the ethics around this. So is it ethical to inject people with certain things to make them stronger? I am going to try and get in there this year. Last year I walked by and the line was absolutely massive even to get in the door, but it seems to be a hot topic going forward.
Have you ever watched Gattaca? I think I asked you this before and at the time you hadn't.
I still have not.
You really should check that out. It really is about a lot of the ethics with our ability to do genetic engineering and how government and on biosecurity in that once we understand DNA and once it's easy for governments to have access to all of our DNA, all the kind of dystopian crap that could happen.
Well, they're already working on that with like 23andMe, right?
Absolutely. And Ethan Hawke, Uma Thurman, good movie, kind of old. Don't know if it stands up. I haven't watched it for a while.
Gattaca. It's still on my list. I'm too busy getting caught up with all the episodes of Pokemon again, though. Sorry.
I know. You're watching the Netflix F1 season.
Oh, it's so good.
Back to Grinders.
Told you. Risky click of the day.
Yeah, so, make sure Safe Search is on.
And we've only really just kind of touched the surface there. There is so much that goes into biohacking, and we're going to dive into a lot of these, including Grinders. In future episodes where we can go much more in depth into them. Any other high-level stuff you want to go over before we bounce out of here, Corey?
No, I think we covered a nice intro. It'd be fun to talk more.
Yeah.
Should we put ourselves on the hook and say, why don't we try to contact some of these biohackers and see if they're willing to talk to us?
Absolutely. That's a great idea.
And by the way, biohackers out there, if Amal Grofstra, I already screwed up your name, so you quit. You're not coming. I get it. But if you're listening, definitely give us a contact because we'll be trying to contact you.
Yeah. And any of you guys out there listening to this episode, if there's a topic that is part of biohacking that you want us to cover, please let us know on Twitter. I'll say it again during the outro, but I'm at XORRO_. Corey is at SecAdept. And let us know if there's any subtopic within biohacking you want us to cover. Thanks again for listening, everyone. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Hopefully you can review on Google Play Store now. I don't think you can still. Anyways, if you have any questions on today's topic, suggestions for future topics, including more biohacking, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at XORRO_. Corey is at SecAdept, and the both of us are at #the443podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.
Unless #Facebook's down.
#podcast down.